Good morning, KRFY listeners, and thanks for tuning in to Community Conversation today. I'm Susie Prez, your host. Community Conversation is an interim show in place of the live morning show and broadcasts each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m., bringing local content through recorded interviews. Today's interview is with the Bonner General Health COVID Response Team, and I'll introduce my guests in a few minutes, but I want you to remember that Community Conversation presents recorded interviews via Zoom, and due to occasional internet glitches, sound quality can vary, so we ask for your patience if that does happen. And we also want to thank Zoom for supporting our Community Conversation efforts. Today's show will also be available on our website as a podcast at krfy.org. So, like I said, today we have the COVID response team from Bonner General Health, and my guests are Daniel Holland. He's the Director of Diagnostic Imaging. Good morning, Daniel. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you. And Tricia Mayhew, you're a registered nurse with risk management at this time you're part of the response team for COVID. Thanks for joining us, Tricia.
Thank you so much for having us.
And I just want to thank everyone at Bonner General Health for the amazing amount of work that you're doing right now to get our community safe and healthy through this pandemic. It was only a year ago at this time that we were just starting to hear about something that was coming called COVID-19, something about a pandemic. I don't think we really understood at this point in time a year ago what was coming. So a lot has changed since then. Let's review the status of COVID-19 pandemic in our community and, you know, the different levels that it has impacted just from our own observations, but also the impact on our healthcare providers, especially Bonner General Health. I remember at some point in time, a little tent went up outside the emergency room, and I'm sure things have changed since then. So either one of you could just kind of weigh in at where we're at and where we started and what's the status.
So Panhandle Health District right now is reporting that we have a total of 2,533 COVID cases in Bonner County, with 756 of those cases being currently active. The hospital itself, we kind of are any given day varying on bed availability. Sending patients out is a continual problem due to other hospitals in our area having capacity issues as well.
So when you say there's 756 active cases in our community right now, where are all those people? What are they doing if they're actively infected with COVID?
Well, hopefully at this point, they're quarantining if they are not already in the hospital. Fortunately, for us here in Sandpoint and Bonner County, the impact in the ICU is lower. Today we had one person in the hospital with COVID, which is great. Our death rate has not been as high as, of course, the urban areas and other states. But most of these people are having some mild to moderate symptoms, and so they're quarantining at this point at home.
So when you say they're quarantining at home, does that mean that they have medical supervision of any kind? Are they taking medication? What is the way that someone recovers from COVID if they're at home? How do they do that?
So if they're quarantining at home, then they have been found by medical staff to not need hospitalization or support. So they are recommended to stay at home until their symptoms are no longer present, but then to contact their providers and present to the hospital if their symptoms, specifically shortness of breath, get worse and they need oxygen support or hospitalization.
So their own healthcare providers really support them through their at-home time of recovery.
Correct.
Okay, so that's quite a few active cases in our community. And it's, so I would say that we're in the pandemic quite solidly right now. There's hope on the horizon, but what can we still at this time do as citizens to help? I know that in federal buildings, we're supposed to be wearing masks. That means the post office. I sat outside the post office the other day and five people walked in without their masks, big sign on the door, but that did not get them to put their masks on. Do masks really matter?
So the best thing we can do at this time is making sure we're wearing a mask. If other people, especially since other people choose not to at this time, staying at least 6 feet from others, avoiding crowded areas as much as you can, washing your hands often, following the CDC travel guidance. I hear a lot of people saying that they need the vaccine because they're traveling. Well, CDC recommends that we continue to decrease our traveling as much as possible right now. Following your quarantine guidance after exposure, and you know, to follow any other applicable workplace or school place guidance.
Do you have anything to add to that, Daniel? You've been on the front lines.
Pretty good job of covering that.
And so hand washing does matter. I want to just think about when we first started, because it has been just about a year. I remember everybody setting up their washing stations in their garage so that anything that came into their homes was sterilized and wiped down with antibacterial wipes. And we were making our own hand sanitizers. And that was the first thing we did, was start washing our hands. Masks came in a little bit later. I remember getting out a bunch of us looking for material and getting out our sewing machines and making those little masks and trying to buy straps for our ears, things like that. So really masks have turned into a first line of defense at this point. And when you say, if others aren't wearing their mask, at least you can wear a mask. Isn't it best if both people are wearing masks to prevent the spread of this very virulent disease, this virus?
Of course. You know, wearing a mask is helping prevent the spread to other people. So it requires then that other person to be wearing a mask to help prevent the spread to yourself. You know, the general idea of wearing that mask, as I've been saying, is to reduce kind of your blast radius, to take that area that those droplets are traveling and try to reduce that down.
Well, there you go. So wear your mask, folks. You're helping protect your neighbor and your friend. I wanted to also, when we're just reviewing the virus in general, since it's been a year, what impact has it had on our healthcare system? Obviously, things have changed drastically, but you all have been there watching it happen day to day. Just if you could give a little overview of the intense impact that it's had on the healthcare system here in North Idaho.
Well, I guess, you know, one of the biggest impacts, because of how careful the hospital staff need to be with their PPE and isolation, there's a lot of things. It takes longer to take care of a patient. You've got to put your PPE on. You have to have somebody watch you when you take it off. It takes longer to get into a patient's room to take care of them. You want to kind of consolidate all your care. So that just takes an extraordinary amount of time for one patient that has COVID. So if you have many people in there, it just takes a lot of manpower to care for those patients. And then the resources, meaning the staff, the equipment, the money that goes into that, that just decreases the resources that we have for other people coming into the hospital with, you know, other issues. So it's not necessarily just COVID, but if you've got all those beds filled up with COVID people and you break your leg, where are we going to put that person that broke their leg, and who's going to take care of them? So there's those impacts themselves. The emergency room staff, and, you know, even more when those people come in, there's limited area for isolation rooms in that area. So it really, really affects every department down.
You know, and there's also just that the continued stress level that we all are under, and especially those that are in those rooms dealing with those patients on a day in and day out basis. It's been incredibly taxing. You see it across the United States. You see people leaving healthcare due to this, the stress they've been under. And it's, so that's a huge impact as well.
Kind of emotionally and economically too.
Yep.
So what, just stay with this for a moment. What kind of changes did the hospital have to implement very quickly? This thing changed so fast. I would say in the first month, you made tremendous amount of changes. Tremendous, is that a word? A whole lot of changes in the beginning. What was that like for the hospital? Just packed.
Yeah, it's funny because there's been not just that initial rollout and changes, but then change after change after change after change as we adapt and figure out how can we do this more efficiently, whether it's, you know, setting up, isolation rooms and ante rooms so that we can get in out of our PPE, making sure that those droplets are being maintained in specific areas, how we screen patients coming in a hospital, how we screen patients for procedures. I don't think there is anything that it really hasn't affected to at least some degree. Obviously, some areas get a little more affected than others, but I think the biggest problem has been it's just changed so many times. We've had to adapt over and over and over again. And so as soon as you have a staff that is kind of figured out a flow, we're having to flip it again. We're having to make an adjustment. We're having to decide to reroute patients a different direction or set up the rooms separately.
And unfortunately, this creates confusion for the community as well, because we're changing the rules all the time and they don't understand that we are changing them as new information is received and adapting to that. They might see it as confusion in our process that we don't know what's going on, that we're always changing. And so it's really not changing, it's adapting to the information that we have to this week and sometimes even today to create the safest area for both our patients and our staff.
One thing I was impressed with Bonner General Health was how quickly the testing situation or capacity was brought to the forefront, because there again, new information, how to do it. I mean, at one point you were sending them away the test and it was, 7 days, and now you're getting tests turnaround very quickly. And I don't think a lot of people understand that it's not just a matter of getting a different testing result, but it's also, there's a lot to put together. I think of the IT guys and how they had to put so much work in constantly to stay up with the current, as you say, constantly changing needs and informational networks.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it just continues. It's just, we develop a process and then we reevaluate. Is this a sustainable process? Do we change it? How can we make it better for everybody involved?
Okay, well, that's kind of where we're at, and there's always hope on the horizon. And within a very short period of time, we now have, I would say it's a miracle short period of time, we have something called the vaccine. And so we can talk about that, but what I've heard is the vaccine is just another level of protection. And what does that mean for us, for our country, for our world? But what does it mean for the hospital and how you're moving forward? But also, how does it work? Just the vaccine in general, we can get to the rollout for the hospital, but what is the vaccine and how does it work? Why is it important and why are we celebrating it?
Well, the great thing about this vaccine is that the technology has been around for decades. So the use of the mRNA is not a new technology, but using it as a vaccine is new. They used it for Zika, they used it for Ebola, they use it in cancer treatment, immunotherapy currently. And what the vaccine does is we introduce a small part of RNA, not DNA, but it's kind of the instructions for the DNA into the body. And what it does is it tells our immune system how to create a protein spike that will build up immunity and fight against the virus if in fact you are exposed to it. So the good thing is there's no live virus in this. You cannot get COVID from getting this vaccine. It is a very small part of a sequence of the virus that, you can use the word tricks. It kind of tricks the body into seeing something that and creating a response. So the side effects that people get after they have the vaccine, we can call them side effects, but really what they are is their immune responses that you would normally get when you do get a virus, because it's your body reacting to an immune response. So the fever, the chills, the fatigue, the body aches, these are all things that you might experience when you get the virus, but really what they are is your immune system kicking up.
And so I imagine the healthcare, were you going to say something, Daniel?
No.
Okay.
I imagine. Great job with that.
Are you celebrating the vaccine there at the hospital? I mean, it's a
absolutely
good thing.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Every day. I mean, we are so excited to have this vaccine and be able to provide it to the community. And I was the first person at Bonner General to get the vaccine. I'm like, bring it on. I am so happy.
I think over 2 weeks since our second dose. So we technically are fully immunized. So it's really a nice, wonderful feeling to know that, you know, it's here, we're able to, you know, start this process and make a difference in this community that way.
Yeah. And the response, I think, from the community is really quite amazing. It's so positive and such a overwhelming outcry for people who want to get this vaccine. I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too.
So you both have been immunized and it's been 2 weeks since your second vaccine. That means that you're as immunized as you can get pretty much, but you're still both, I'm watching you on this Zoom recording and you're both wearing masks. And that is an important element that folks need to know. Tell us why that's important.
Well, you know, at this point, there's still a lot of questions about long-term effects, how long it's going to last, whether you can still possibly be a carrier after you've been vaccinated while you're still not necessarily getting sick yourself. So we want to be cautious, take all precautions, kind of as what we were doing beforehand, until at a time when we really have a good chunk of our community that have been vaccinated. And that's obviously our goal, is to get back to some semblance of what life was like prior to COVID. And the vaccine is, I think, our biggest key to get there.
So you're talking about that word that we've been hearing called herd immunity, but really I like the way you say it. It's a large portion of our community is vaccinated so that the degree of ability for this this virus to affect our community, it's going to impact the hospital, it's going to impact everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Daniel may have gone to the store yesterday and touched a doorknob and carried the virus on his hand. Okay. And then he comes in, he's protecting me with, you know, from his germs. But if we touch and that type of thing, I could carry it. I'm probably not going to get sick. I'm fully immunized, but I could go somewhere else and put my hand on something and pass that virus on to somebody else who isn't immunized. So you still want to continue this precaution, continue until most people have either had COVID and have some sort of immunity, or we have the vaccine, or, you know, the experts are going to tell us, you know, we've reached maximum immunity here.
And at this point, it's unclear really where that line is. You know, there's a lot of debate right now on what herd immunity is, what percentage of our community having had COVID as well as having the vaccine together to create that herd immunity. So we are patiently waiting for the experts to tell us kind of where that line is. And we're just going to try to get there as quick as possible by hopefully getting people the vaccine versus people getting sick.
Well, you just led me into my next question. How to get the vaccine? I know everybody wants to get it. Everybody's in line. There's been some websites you can go to and sign up, but are you signing up to call your doctor? What can someone do? How is it working? And how are you coordinating with Panhandle Health District, who I talked to last week? How is it all working for this rollout that we're looking at?
So there is the Idaho Vaccine Advisory Committee, and they meet, I believe, every 2 weeks, and they talk about what next steps are, if things need to be changed, and they bring those recommendations to the governor. So again, when you're adapting, when you're deciding who you're going to vaccine, these committees make decisions based on doses available, vulnerable population. At some point, we were going to do 75 and olders first. And then they decided, you know what, we need to do those teachers first because there's a smaller group. Let's get that smaller group done. And then why do we have to wait for 75 and over? It's impacting everybody over 65. So we just did it to one big group. So they may change these phases, these levels periodically based on, you know, what is the disease doing and who is it affecting and how can we best decrease the burden to the hospitals with targeting the right groups. So while the phases are out there in print through the Department of Health, they may change and they may change again based on what the virus is doing.
We have a website set up. So at bonnergeneral.org, there is a COVID link and you click on that COVID link. And once you click on that COVID link, it takes you to a page and right in the smack dab middle of that page is the vaccine questionnaire. And it's an online piece and you fill out some information and that gets emailed directly to myself, which then we drop into a folder so that we can stratify out who we have requests from so that we can make sure that we're working on that correct subgroup that Trish was talking about. And we've had, as of today, I think I've had 3,700 submissions in the last, it'll be 2.5 weeks. So it's a pretty large, overwhelming response. We've gotten through 1,188 vaccines. Probably about 80-85% of those have been first vaccines, but we have gotten a good chunk of second vaccines as well.
So I'm just going to say that website again, bonnergeneral.org.
You got it.
Okay, that's where to go, folks, and you can get your name in. And if you don't have access to a computer, call your neighbor. They'll help you get on that list.
The other option, if you do not have access to the computer, you can call Bonner General's COVID hotline.
It's on the website.
Which is 3323, it's on the site. And you can leave your name, your date of birth, and your phone number, and we will register you for you.
Well,
so we will not make an appointment, we will register you, and that will go to the scheduler, and the scheduler will contact you. But of course, that's according to how many vaccines we have available.
Yeah, we're only, because we get vaccine allocated to us weekly, we try to make sure that we're only scheduling out 1 week. That way we know that we have enough vaccines for what that next week's gonna look like. But our max capacity right now is only about 400. So when we have 3,700 submissions, we've only gotten through 1,100, you're doing 400 a week, you know, we're trying to get through it as quick as we can, but there's definitely a couple rate limiting factors that are gonna dictate how long it's gonna take for us to contact.
And I think that picture is going to change over time as you ramp up the capacity to vaccinate mm-hmm. through from Panhandle Health District to the local pharmacies, to even your own healthcare provider. And that phone number again on that hotline is, I think you said 208-263-3341?
265-3323.
Okay, 265-3323. But it's on the website at bonnergeneral.org. We are running out of our Zoom meeting time here. There's so much more to talk about. I had 10 more questions for you, but mostly I want to say thank you for the hard work you're doing and for getting this vaccine into the arms of all of our citizens here in North Idaho. And this is happening across our nation. The vaccine is safe, but wearing your mask to protect each other is another level of protection that is vital. And so thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Daniel Holland, Director of Diagnostic Imaging, and Tricia Mayhew, Risk Management Registered Nurse with Bonner General Health COVID Response Team.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate everything you're doing. Thanks for joining me today and taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so that's about it, folks. Contact information again is bonnergeneral.org, or you can call 208-265-3323. And I want to remind you that the show, we stream KRFY on the web at krfy.org. And this is all community conversation shows, our podcasts on that same website at krfy.org. And since we're a resource for our community and the North Idaho area and our county, it's critical COVID-19 pandemic red state. Please wear your mask. Please protect your neighbors and your friends and your family and keep yourself and others safe. And thanks for listening. And please enjoy Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long. Bye-bye for now. This has been Community Conversations. Again, thanks for listening.